Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Kirk Gray.
Hey, Kirk, I got a trick question for you.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, we brought it up near the end of our last episode, and I thought, oh, that would actually make a cool topic.
Okay.
So if somebody asks you in an interview, can you pass HALT?
Yes, that would be a revealing question, because obviously you can't pass HALT. HALT is an evaluation. It's not a pass fail test, and there is no pass fail to HALT. So right. That's a simple answer.
It's a simple answer, but the idea is that, to me, if somebody asked me that question, either they're trying to just, they didn't read my resume, they don't know who I am, right? And either they have no idea what HALT is, mm-hmm. which is dangerous in an interview to assume that your person you're interviewing with is an idiot. It happens. Sometimes they are. And I say, you know, I'm not working here. You don't know what you're talking about. And I'm not doing stupid stuff, you know, and I got up and walked out. So I'm not going to waste your time interviewing me further. I'm not going to work for you. You don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
More often than not, it's an opening question, and it's not always just, can you pass HALT? It may be a question of, well, what is your depth of knowledge of this? Do you really know what you're talking about? You know, or stuff like that. It's more a question to say, do you know this? As opposed to, do you know anything? Because if I ask you, do you know about HALT, how to do HALT, H-A-L-T? Mm-hmm. It's a yes, no question. There's no discussion.
Right.
Right. You say yes, and they'll like, prove it. And then like, what's your evidence of that? Tell me about it. And you either you know it or you don't. It'll become clear pretty quickly. So that's a technique, you know, is to understand that. But some people shortcut it and say, can you pass HALT? And I've had somebody say, oh, yeah, absolutely. That we never fail that test. And it was the supplier I'm talking to. You know, you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Right. Or it's even doing it a little more sideways, like, how do you pass HALT?
Yeah.
And I go, okay. Yeah. You know, and obviously, if they ask that question, well, that would be a good indication. You're assuming, you know, when they say anything, ask you about HALT, that it's a general knowledge that people know about HALT. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten so many different concepts or people saying, oh yeah, we do HALT. And then I ask what they do. Oh, and then they say, well, we stop at 80 degrees because that's good enough. 80°C because that's good enough.
Well, you're not doing it though.
Yeah. So you think you are. And you call it that, but it's not that. So, you know, this is a problem. Is different understandings of it, and also they think, well, it's just vibration and thermal, you know, cycling or step stress.
We got a chamber. We have a chamber. We do HALT.
Like, no, you can do HALT. You can do HALT without a chamber and without any, you know, you can voltage. You can do frequency. You can do, you know.
Well, some parts of the country, like your part of Colorado, you just put it outside any day of the year and it'll get thermal cycled like 15 times.
Yeah, it's true. It's quite extreme here, but
All right. So that's just one trick question.
Okay.
What other ones have you run across or heard about, you know, that are like, do they really know what they're talking about? Or is this just a test, you know, kind of thing?
Well, you know, because I guess they'd ask something about MTBF, you know, and that would be that would be your favorite question.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. Tell me the meaning of MTBF, you know, and how that helps you improve your reliability process.
And then they say, but our product is not repairable. So, you really should have answered the question for mean time to failure instead. I'm like, oh, okay, you're so proud of yourself.
Yeah.
Have a good time.
MTTR, you know.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, come on, people. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that we would say, well, this is not a good fit for me because I would have to do so much convincing and re-educating. And that really has to start from the top. So unless you're in an executive, almost executive position and directing downwards, you know, my biggest success in that field was when I was hired as a consultant for Advanced Energy back in the 80s mm-hmm. and early 90s. And I talked to the president for about an hour and a half, and he was an engineer, which made every difference in the world mm-hmm. that he could understand. And he had actually designed and built these power supplies. And he'd actually worked in this company early in the development. Now it was a, you know, 400, 500 person company, but mm-hmm. he understood what we were saying. And we looked at his failure analysis reports and they said, yeah, this probably would be a benefit for us. And it did. It reduced their, on the one product that they had already been producing for 2 years, it reduced their failure rate from 5% to 0.5%.
Wow.
It did cost them something. It cost them chambers and HASS. And
some design changes.
Design changes, yes. You know, that I had a record. Now, one of the problems in our field is you can't carry that record very well to another company because you're locked under NDAs. Yeah. So you may have success, but it's...
You could talk about it like you just did this now and say, so you give that president as the reference and they can call him up. So did he actually help you make this change? Yeah, he did.
You know? Yeah. Well, if he's still around.
Yeah. Well, there's that. So, I mean, there's the question of, there's other trick questions. MTBF would be a good one. It was like, yeah, and there I definitely think they don't know what they're talking about, but it's my bias and immediate on
well,
that.
Sure. And I'd say that's silly. You don't understand MTBF if you think it has is a good indicator of your reliability, you know?
Yeah. You just... And that one I would expect, but anybody that actually looked at my resume would go, all right, we better not ask. I had somebody walk up in an airport once that I was heading to a conference and they said, so you're Fred, right? And I go, yeah. And he said, so what do you think about MTBF? I've been really curious. He started laughing. He had a no MTBF button on his shirt.
Right.
He opened
his
coat up and showed me his button.
don't sugarcoat it, Fred. What is your real feelings about MTBF? Right. Yeah. And, that was your first website.
Second, but yeah, pretty close.
Oh,
the first
okay.
One. Yeah. But the idea is, what package do you use for reliability prediction?
Yeah, exactly. Use FIDES, use Mill Handbook 217.
Or do you combine them in some awful way that nobody really understands, you know?
And why do you believe, and have you seen any correlation with your predictions in the past to what is actually happening in the field?
Another one is when I ask people, so what happens when something fails? And they say, we isolate the component and send it to the vendor. And so it's not a trick question. When I ask them this, is that, do you get useful information back from the vendor? And they all look at each other going, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Then why do you send it to the vendor? It's because we don't want to take the time to figure it out.
That's right. Yeah.
No, it's not a trick question, guys. You need to understand failures. You need to do the lab work. You need to get a good, if you need an X-ray machine, go to a lab that supports that and has that equipment.
Yes.
Hire them. And
there's a lot of good independent failure analysis labs that do a very good job. I've had them right here in the Denver area and can do cross sections of decapsulations. They can do, and they're very experienced in it. And
material identification, they can tell you if this is good intermetallic layers of bonded well, or so that this white powder is bad or good for your product.
Exactly. They've probably seen it in other products that they've dealt with, especially if they're independent, they're dealing with a lot of different companies and different products, components and things like that. Yep. So they have a very good general knowledge, and I would definitely trust them over the actual component manufacturer, because You know, he doesn't want to be blamed for anything. And he doesn't know your system. He doesn't know, you know, how many places where you use this component or how you use this component or the supporting surrounding circuitry and what could be in transients that he has no idea that you had. Mm-hmm. And you have no idea that you had because you haven't looked at the, you know, function
the system.
Of,
yeah. Yeah. In context,
you haven't done anything to really analyze what the potential causes of this failure is in situ in the circuit in as it's operating, you know, like, because I know that there's a lot of times there's transients, there's you know, motor feed, I guess coil feedback, you know, from a like a solenoid coil.
There's all kinds of
right
things that are going on,
right? And it and they're very fast. Sometimes you can't even, you know, they take
really good oscilloscope,
a really fast oscilloscope to see these things, but they can be extremely critical causes.
Damaging.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, one of my favorites was walking through it was an engineering lab. It was the design team's labs, and mm-hmm. there's all these bare circuit boards laying all over the place.
Yeah.
And I like, don't you worry about ESD at all, kind of mucking up your, you know, ability to get your prototypes here to work? And go, you know, we think about that every now and then, but we haven't done anything about it. And says, do you have problems with your boards not working? Your chips. Oh yeah.
Do you notice that little spark between your finger and the board?
Yeah, and it was, and they had tables that could have been grounded, but they weren't. And I'm like, you know, they only work if you actually use them properly. And they had a whole bin full of boards that they knew didn't work anymore. And they were swapping them out until they found one that worked and damaging them as they go. It was amazing to me.
Right. Yeah. You see that in repair shops.
You hear that in everywhere. It's like, oh, right. That'll never happen.
Right.
Well, that'll never happen.
Now, up here in very dry Colorado, it is, you know, ESD was a significant problem at Storage Tech. You know, we had fabrication board assembly lines, and they control the humidity in the room. Mm-hmm. To
and
help
probably
reduce
had
that.
Motion to keep your hands conductive.
Exactly. And you always had a ground strap on your leg to the floor or whatever. And yeah. That's kind of one of those hidden damaging stresses that is hard to see and may not be realized by those that are not aware of what ESD damage, how it happens.
Oh, you know, and it took a conversation with this director of engineering. It's like, you realize that those 100 boards are prototypes and they're not cheap. Oh yeah. Tell me about it. We can barely budget to get enough to even do anything. And
yeah.
Then stop destroying them. You know, just stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so,
and you know, there's some circuits that are fairly immune to it, but they had very right. small microprocessors on these things and very, you know, small gate sizes and all this. Like,
right. And then there's ways to build in protection onto the board to keep that.
There is. They didn't
problem.
Have any space for that. Right. I asked about right. it. They had nothing. And like, you're plugging in a cord under this thing that's full of charge and
right.
yet no protection except on the chip. Yeah, that's just asking for trouble. But no. That was one is ignoring problems. And it's the same. Oh, the customer would never use it that way. Okay. This is not a trick question. Yeah. This is, you know, what are you talking about kind of statements?
Yeah. How do you know that? You know, why are you saying that? Because I guarantee people will use it lots of ways that you never expected.
That's right.
Planned ahead. Because you don't see that. You don't also, you only see the immediate, the first years of use when people have gotten accustomed to it being pretty robust in that application, and then they stress it to putting it on their boat, or they put it on.
Yeah, they move it to another location.
You know, attach it to the top. I don't know. They're different places. But they, right, they get comfortable with its operation if it's reliable and start using it in more harsh environments. I mean,
well, you know, it just made me think. I saw an ad for like the early, I think with Model T or even vintages about that time frame, early uh-huh. 1900s kind of thing. Mm-hmm. There weren't really that many paved roads, right? There is, you know, so these cars were bouncing along and potholes and all the other stuff. And
pretty rough stuff.
Yeah. And now you have to buy a specialty car to go off-road. So we haven't gotten any better. I'm just thinking about that.
Yeah. Well, right. And, but I think that, you know, we've got more technology that can transform cars. I think you have different driving modes and cars that you can program in and, you know, sporty, I don't know. I've, you know, suspension, things like that. I know that they're, you know, settings for some cars.
For some, yeah. Yeah. And you can put it in or out or four wheel drive with a push of a button.
Exactly.
That is the cool stuff nowadays.
You know, don't you have active shock absorbers too? I think, or you can have just like we have noise canceling headphones.
Well, you must be driving some expensive cars.
I looked that up. I think they have a feedback system for, you know, active shock absorber. You know,
so as the bump starts, it takes the bump out before it hits.
Well,
the car.
Right, it can do the opposite, just like we do with headphones, where mm-hmm. you're actually taking in the sound wave and forcing a 180 degree out of phase, exact opposite wave. Hitting that, so it silences, they zeroes out.
Sure, right? It's a noisy way to silence stuff, though. You know,
it is, and some people have complained. You know, I'm not bothered by it, but I definitely have a couple of noise canceling headphones, and they work quite well.
Yeah,
well, I can really tell.
Yeah, the idea is that reliability. In identifying trick questions or what are you thinking kind of phrases.
Yeah.
They happen. It didn't take very much thinking to come up with all these examples. And there's dozens more, I'm sure, if we kept this recording going a bit longer. The idea is that you need to know enough about reliability engineering and just good general practice engineering in general mm-hmm. to identify those. It's and say, now wait a second. Do we really know how our customer is going to use this? You know, what do you mean that we're only using MTBF because that's good enough? I hope nobody has that problem. No.
But I have asked a job candidate about MTBF, and they said, as soon as they start rattling off
all the good stuff about it, you're like, yeah, I just got to work out.
Oh man, this is not going to go.
You know,
long.
The suppliers will never send you bad components. Okay, it's kind of a problem.
Yeah,
believing that
they'll never.
You just.
Yeah. Oh, it was our fault. Yeah, we made a bad one here.
Yeah, here you go. Here's a new one for you.
Yeah, here's a new diode.
Yeah. But the idea is that there's, and I think this is true in every engineering field, there's misconceptions, there's ways we've always done stuff, there's all right. kinds of practices out there that with a little bit of scrutiny, you can add a lot of value. You can actually make improvements. Those are sometimes they're cues to say, do they really know what they're talking about? Maybe this is more of a training challenge than an engineering challenge. And other times it's a way to the, you know, probe, does somebody know what they're talking about? And I think we talked about both of those scenarios, mm-hmm. but in general is you need some fundamental knowledge about reliability engineering, preferably through experience to say, you know, yeah, things like this do fail. And if you use it in Colorado near where Kirk lives, it's probably mm-hmm. going to fail. A little bit of common sense goes a long way. And part of it is understand what's behind the question or the phrase or the statement. And sometimes they're absolutely true. And for that circumstance, environment, product, and so on, it's that's the way things are.
Yeah.
Yet, if you don't get a rational, verifiable explanation of why that is true, well, then it's just conjecture. It's just fantasy.
It, right.
You know, your opinion is as good as mine until we have the facts and kind
right.
of thing. And
right.
part of reliability engineering is asking those questions and understanding it at a fundamental level. And I think that helps you navigate all these weird things that people say and believe or understand, or that's the way we always did it, kinds of things so that you can identify where you can actually make a really big impact and improvement or make some changes for the better for everybody. Those kinds
of
things.
Yeah, that can be a daunting task though.
Oh yeah.
I'm cutting against the grain when I talk about using testing to limits and testing to extremes that'll never see in its in use environment. And they go, oh no, that you're going to give us a bunch of irrelevant issues that we're going to go chasing on that don't mean anything in the field. Right. And that's, you know, it's just, you've got to either enjoy the battle because the victories are few and far between. I have had
well,
some
you know
great
you make
ones.
It sound pretty dismal.
Well, if you try, if you want to be a change agent, and that's what I did, I don't want to come in there and say, oh yeah, I'll do these MTBF calculations for you, even though I have, and I have done predictions for companies just because I need the money and just not to fight the battle, you know, and to argue with the guys to say it'll never see that in its in-use environment and try and convince them that's not what I'm trying to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, whether you need the job sometimes, you got to take it. You know, I'll do the predictions for you, even though they're meaningless. A lot of people do jobs that they have to survive and then look for the jobs that you can actually go make a difference and that are open to change. And, you know, definitely at Dell, it was very useful, especially during the transition of leaded solders to lead-free solders. Mm-hmm. They found that extremely helpful. So those techniques are still used today. And I think Huawei is probably still using those techniques. I don't know. And you won't know. And nobody will know because that's all hidden. You know, that's company proprietary. Just like
there was an ad. I think we even talked about it. I know I talked to somebody. Was it a Samsung folding phone?
Yeah.
And they showed the test device folding it in.
Yes.
And out.
Yeah.
And then the first ones got out there and they folded it three times and it would crack or it would have a line through it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you don't see behind the scenes life testing type stuff very often in advertising.
No. And
especially after that just failed.
Well, I'm curious to see how folding phones will do. They look like a good idea, but you know, folding anything is a mechanical cycling S-end curve, and it eventually will fail.
Yeah, no, it keeps us in business, doesn't it, Kurt?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, trust them; it's never going to fail. We tested it.
Yeah, and okay. The problem is those folding tests that I've seen are, you know, they've got a little machine that collapses
perfectly
every time. Right. Nobody dropping it on the ground and then folding it. Nobody's putting it in dirt, dust, paper clips, right. Folded under, you know, pants, whatever they're, you know, and sideways torque, you know, between the, on the hinge.
Oh, but that'll never happen.
Yeah, right.
Nobody will do that. It's too expensive.
Right. or what's open, you know, the drop testing, how many times they do it with open, how many times they do it's closed, how many times, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
That's
but the
all
idea
secret.
Is that there's all kinds of stuff that we can learn and do. And sometimes the way people talk about reliability engineering is used all kinds of different ways, but it's also a clue for us to, you know, learn something and to transfer knowledge that we have and stuff. You need some basic knowledge to get these ones. But listening to a few of these episodes, hopefully it picks up. Your knowledge will be exponentially improved. And that's our goal there.
Well, we're trying to spread the word, and definitely you give a, especially with Xendo Reliability, give a wide spectrum of the issues in either product development or in plant maintenance and that kind of thing, which is way aftermarket.
Yeah.
So it's been, I mean, This is really a very comprehensive website, except for site reliability engineering, which hopefully someday you'll get somebody to put an input.
Yeah, I got to find some a good candidate for that. But anyway,
okay.
If you're listening to this, if you catch on all these phrases and you understood it, maybe laughed a little bit. But if you have a few other phrases that we missed or didn't bring up, that'd be cool to hear about. What's your favorite catchphrase or trick question type thing?
Right.
We'd love to hear from you. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. There's a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways for you to get in touch. And we always enjoy hearing from you. And we look forward to your questions and ideas and suggestions for future episodes. And with that, Kirk, I haven't seen a folding phone, and I'm not going to go out of my way to go find one to play with at the
moment.
Well,
when I look at a folding phone, what I want to look at is that crease where it folds.
Yeah.
And see how, you know, it's going to get distortion a little bit after a while. And I imagine, I don't know what polymer, is it glass that they're using?
You know, I have no idea. I'm curious.
Because we know polymers scratch and things like that. So, I'm curious
glass
too.
Glass doesn't fold very easily.
No, it doesn't. So it's got to be some polymer. And whether it's scratch resistant, that was the thing about Gorilla Glass. It was so strong.
Yeah.
Now it's gotten incredibly strong.
Yeah. But
we'll see.
All right. Have fun, Kirk.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.